You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNADS.com.
How come Manilo didn't write, I write the songs?
Answer me this, answer me this.
Will Cisco ever tire of looking at thongs?
Answer me this, Helen and Ollie, answer me this.
It's the most terrible time of the year.
Yeah,
there's football on and Wimbledon and I don't care. I wish I was dead at this time of the year.
I mean, it's not just football and Wimbledon, is it? It's also the Commonwealth Games coming up.
Yeah, we know
there's rugby going on.
Yeah, it's just constant
it's
sport.
It's interminable.
It's too hot as well.
I'd hibernate during the summer. I don't know what the correct word for that is.
I suppose the advantage, though, for most normal people who don't like sport is they can go outside, but you don't even like that.
No.
What is there for you? You don't even watch Big Brother anymore.
No, I watched all of Orange is the New Black in about a week. That's what there was for me instead of sport. But we will concede to the fact that sport is happening with a sporty question from Seb, who says, during the World Cup, I have noticed that all the players have perfect haircuts.
Sounds like Seb is enjoying the sport action just as much as we are.
Ooh, delicious buttocks.
I actually spend some of the time watching World Cup games, watching the advertising hoarding.
Oh, Jesus.
And I actually realise sometimes, even when England have just scored a goal, I haven't noticed, because I was like, oh, that's interesting that they're advertising the PS4 across these territories. Seriously, that's what I'm thinking.
Are you not thinking, oh, now I've got a lawn? I wonder what grade they've cut their grass on. Answer me this, says Seb. How is this possible? Is each team bringing an army of hairdressers to Brazil? Because, of course, a football team needs an army of hairdressers rather than just one or two. Or are the players wandering around the host cities in search of hairdressers?
Bit of both, I should imagine. Really? Professional footballers are not short of a bob.
I don't think they're sporting bobs, although I think they're normally mullets.
It's probably up to the individual player, but at the same time, I imagine there is a team stylist for when they have their photos taken going to see local... Because you get these awful things, don't you? I mean, it reached its nadir, this, I think. When the England team went to see Auschwitz when they were in Russia and Poland that time. They have these photo calls where they go and do local things.
Yeah. Usually they're all dressed alike as well,
exactly,
aren't they?
Exactly. So for those photo calls, there must be a team stylist. Mm. So I imagine that each footballer has their own look, which obviously they've paid for and developed at home. If they choose to go out and top it up whilst they're in Brazil or bring their own stylist over, I suppose they can. But I imagine there's a team stylist who maintains each of their individual looks as they request.
I can imagine that in the olden days, when footballers weren't the kind of vain peacocks that they are now, there would be just one stylist who'd give them all a buzz cut or something once every 2 weeks, whereas now they might conceivably have their own privately hired stylist, mightn't they? Because they've got to look good all the time, and many of them have modelling contracts.
Did you see the guy from Ghana who has the number 3 cut into his hair?
No, I didn't, because that would have involved watching some of the football.
No, it wouldn't. It would just involve looking at stupid blogs like I do. he's refused to say why. He said, it's my favourite number. It was handed over to me by my older brother. How can you hand over a haircut?
Well, I hand over a favourite number.
I'm not here to discuss it with anybody. That is a private thing.
It's not
private from the moment you step on the pitch at the World Cup.
With it shaved into your head.
With it shaved into your head.
If it's really private, then write it down on a piece of paper and bury that piece of paper in a place only you know about.
Tattoo it on your bum cheek, yeah. Don't put it in your hair.
Just think about it occasionally rather than wearing it externally. He can't even see it. It's on the side of his head. He can only see it in photos. That invades the privacy.
Yeah, I think you're right.
God.
I think also the other remarkable one must be Wayne Rooney's hair transplants.
Have they taken?
They're really good.
Like,
I mean,
Steve
again,
Carell's.
It's one of the things I was watching during the match was Wayne Rooney's hair. you would never know that he'd. I mean, I wouldn't say it's worth it because obviously it costs a lot of money. Probably
he's got
my
money.
Annual salary he spent on his hair, but you would never know that he was balding. Martin, if you started losing your hair in a traditional way, so receding slowly from now, so you're not going to be fully bald for another 10 years.
From the front?
From the front, or as I am, I've got a crown here that's expanding slowly.
The sunroof.
The sunroof, yeah. Would you choose to do something about it if you had the money, or does it not bother you? I mean, I'm aware you wouldn't spend 50 grand on your hair, but if you could, would you?
Martin, if anything, has more hair than he would know what to do with.
I suppose that's what they do, isn't it? They take some of the hair from his inside bollock or something and put it on the top of his head.
I think the answer's neither. I would not be okay with it, but I don't think I would spend all that money. I'd like to think I'd find a way to be okay with it.
Just add it to your list of great inner turmoil.
Yeah, basically.
Write a poem about it or something. Why would you?
If I was Wayne Rooney and I flew everywhere first class anyway, I could go wherever I want and I had my dream job, then why not? Well, it's just more money, isn't it? But it wouldn't be top of my list and I wouldn't be... I think, see, he's made a business decision, which is he's worth more with hair. So it kind of is paying for itself.
Yeah,
it may not be that he's just vainglorious about it.
If he is like other footballers and getting some kind of face of a brand contract, then probably, yes, the hair would increase his fee.
Well, from that point of view, the one I admire is Kyle Beckerman, who's a US football player. He has dreadlocks, but he's white.
Mm-hmm.
That's a brave look, I think.
That's what the local key cutters in Crystal Palace has got.
Well,
he's cool.
That's as may be, but he's not looking for a sponsorship deal.
I don't know. Because how much does Timpsons pay?
You are ruining yourself out of sponsorship deals. Well, here's another question of sport. Can you believe it? Boring. It's from Sandy. And they say, Helen, answer me this. When players and refs get into arguments during the World Cup matches, what language do they argue in?
Usually mime.
Yeah, there's a lot of that going on, isn't it? They're usually just a second away from doing the wanker gesture, aren't they? My guess is English, says Sandy, but does that mean that a fluency in English is a prerequisite for playing FIFA soccer?
It's not a prerequisite, but they do suggest that it will be useful because I think that is the most common language amongst football players.
Although I imagine a prerequisite to playing for France must be that you pretend you've never heard of English.
Yeah, I think French is the other language that is the most spoken.
It always bloody is, isn't it?
Well, except for in America, where Spanish is...
Except for in the world, where people speak Chinese. Spanish and Chinese. But the French are like, oh no, it's the other official language of the UN and Eurovision. Yeah. Only because you make such a bloody fuss about it.
FIFA have issued a six-language dictionary of soccer-related terms to players. And those languages are English, French, German, Italian, Portuguese and Spanish.
Mm. I suppose you don't need to learn that many words in numerous languages. I mean, yellow card, I imagine that's easy to learn in various languages, and fuck off, I'm right, is also quite easy to learn.
I'm not sorry.
Yeah.
but the referees all had to pass a test in written and spoken English, and so that all five referees at any given match can communicate
can talk to
with
each other.
Yeah, because each officiating team consists of three referees from the same country or region, and two more officials who might be from the other side of the world.
That's quite a sensible decision.
Seems it, yeah. If you want many more of this classic sports bant, then the Answer Me This Sports Day is available right now at answermethisstore.com for a very reasonable price.
It is, only £2.49.
That is very cheap.
1 hour of sporty fun.
Sporty.
Which is not available anywhere else on the internet.
And I think, considering how we feel about sport, we made a very good fist of it.
But if sports isn't your thing, do check out our holiday Christmas and Royal Family themed albums, which are also available.
Good time for our Christmas album, isn't it? Midsummer.
Well,
it's probably Christmas in the Southern Hemisphere right now.
If you got a question, email your question to answer me this podcast at googlemail.com. Answer me this podcast at googlemail.com. It's great.
Here's a question from Jenny from Vancouver, originally from Pinner.
Good to know.
And she says, I live with my fiancé, Brian, and we've recently bought a townhome together. That's her word. That's a word you don't use in Pinner, but I imagine you use in Vancouver.
It's like a mixture of townhouse and downhome.
I can't speak for Vancouver, but being from the Pinner area,
yes.
I know that really the only descriptions of houses that would apply is whether they have a Jewish front garden or a Gentile front garden.
What's the difference?
The Jews basically take up all of the front garden and replace it with concrete, so they park a car on it.
Oh, no. And what do the Gentiles have?
Their front gardens.
Right.
You know, with pretty little flowers and a garden path. Jews don't do that. Not Jews, in Sanmore and Pinner.
Jews like suffering.
No, they like a place to park. we've been together for many years, continues Jenny, and while I love Brian tremendously and with all of my heart, he has a terrible habit of trying to burn down our house.
Oh, Pyro Brian.
And I just don't know how to deal with it anymore.
Maybe live underwater.
Examples are too new. Well, Vancouver. A lot of water around, isn't
there? Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm. Examples are too numerous to list in full, but here are a few highlights of when Brian tried to burn down the house. story number one. Brian is renovating our deck. Mm-hmm. We were having steaks for dinner, so he had to use the propane grill at the front of our house rather than use it at the back.
Well, that's easier for the fire service to reach.
Yeah, I suppose
it is.
Be
glad.
After using the grill to cook the steak, he brought it into our front hall for the night so it wouldn't get stolen, but forgot to turn the propane off.
Oh, Brian!
I only discovered the propane was on when I walked towards the kitchen half an hour later to discover the overpowering odour. Obviously, I got rather annoyed. My fiancé was nonplussed. Was he still breathing?
Yeah, that's it.
My fiancé was unconscious.
Yeah. It's easy to be nonplussed, isn't it, after inhaling a lot of propane?
That is a shocker, isn't it? Although it's one of those, if you do get there in the nick of time, it's not a dramatic story, even though a very dramatic thing could have happened. I've had that when I've left the hob on for too long. I had a friend, actually, who dropped one of those shisha pipes with burning charcoal in it onto his Persian rug. That really became a situation very quickly indeed.
Not ideal.
Very quickly. Yeah. 10 seconds situation.
My mum, back in the late 60s, recounts how there was a power cut and she took a candle into the kitchen because she thought she'd left the gas on. Obviously, you don't take a candle in if you thought you'd left the gas on. Blew half her hair off. Luckily, she was wearing a hairpiece because it was the late 60s.
That's a great story.
Well done, mum.
Well done, mum. It was almost worth it to provide us with that material.
Yeah, even though her eyebrows have been a bit thin ever since.
Have they? Seriously?
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's what did it for Michael Jackson, of course, wasn't it?
Oh,
going on painkillers after blowing his hair off.
She has not been addicted to strong drugs since.
But your house is sort of a theme park?
Not in the least.
It is if you're interested in sculpture.
The sculpture world.
If you like a lot of logs, they've got a lot of logs.
Log world.
They haven't even put a flume in, they've just got the logs. Rude.
Example number two. Mm-hmm. Brian has almost burnt down his friend's house.
Thanks, Brian.
Must be a popular guy, this Brian.
Down the house.
When he returned home from a night out and started cooking chicken nuggets and steak pies in the oven. He managed to put the food in the oven, fall asleep, and wake up hours later to black smoke filling the kitchen and living room.
It's a good thing Brian didn't die from smoke inhalation.
Exactly.
Is it?
Yeah,
who knows? He seems maybe a bit of a liability for this world.
This has happened twice on mainland, once on a boat.
Oh, God.
On a boat.
Brian!
Story number three. Brian attempted to cook a store-bought lasagna for his lunch.
Right.
This is turning into a proper sitcom treatment, isn't it? He turned the oven to broil and did not remove the cardboard lid on the lasagna.
Well, sometimes those instructions can be confusing.
You know, sometimes you don't want to throw the packaging in the bin because it's got the instructions serving suggestion.
Yeah, I'll put it in the oven because then it'll be close to the thing that I need to serve.
Then I know where it is.
Exactly.
Yeah. He then went to watch sports.
I blame sports.
I do too.
Sports.
Always sports' fault.
Connection. There's a Venn diagram, isn't there, between idiots and sport fans. And I returned from grocery shopping to find a full-blown fire in my oven. The man can't even reheat lasagna. 10 exclamation marks. He's 32. Another 10 exclamation marks. If there's any reason to use 20 exclamation marks in a sentence, that might be it.
Brian has earned them. And yet she's still with him.
Needless to say, she says, this has become rather annoying.
I bet it has. I think wondering whether your house can be burnt down whenever you leave it is probably a bit of a concern.
Although, it might be keeping the... keeping the relationship fresh.
Keeping the home fires burning in a terribly literal-minded way.
Keeping the spark in your marriage.
I hope you've got good insurance, Jenny.
Although I love my Brian, continues Jenny, he's so forgetful when it comes to cooking that I've become a micromanager in the kitchen.
I believe he has brought that on himself.
There's a word for a chef who isn't the cook, but is the guy who supervises everything.
Executive chef.
That's what you've become. You've become the executive chef.
You're Anthony Bourdain.
Exactly. That's not so bad.
Yeah. And
you're
Brian,
Gordon Ramsay.
And Brian is an employee who would have been fired by now.
Yeah.
Not in the flame term.
If he comes to bed after me, continues Jenny, I find myself going back downstairs to make sure all the hobs are turned off. Sometimes they're not. And this makes me wild with rage.
I think that's appropriate because you don't want to burn to death in your bed.
I think that's right. No amount of reminding or nagging or note leaving seems to make a difference. So Helen, answer me this. How should I stop my fiancé from burning down our house?
The common thread is cooking. Ban Brian from cooking.
Hmm. But then what if he then becomes the guy who's like, well, don't worry, dear, I'll make the table look nice and candles get involved.
No candles. Get those battery-operated candles if you need them. No candles.
What if someone asks for a light when they're smoking?
No.
There are so many
smoking.
Ways for a
no fire.
Pyro-prone accident idiot to get involved with fire.
Install some very oversensitive smoke alarms in your house. It will drive you nuts, but he might get the message after several hours of flapping at them with tea towels.
Now, that's a clever idea, actually. If you have a joint bank account... spend whatever it is in Canadian dollars getting very expensive smoke alarms fitted.
And a sprinkler system, maybe.
So he feels the pain in his wallet. It's not just you nagging. He's paid for something to rectify his idiocy.
Maybe you should fine him every time he leaves the place at risk of fire.
But ultimately, that's not going to be a fine. That's going to be really building up your pot to pay for the medical help that you'll need inevitably when you do begin to burn.
Yeah, it's a very practical plan, I thought.
So too.
But yeah, I think Brian should only be allowed raw food. Sandwiches, that counts. Doesn't have to be one of those raw food things where you only heat things up to 40 centigrade. I wonder if there's a fire safety course that Brian could be sent on.
That's actually nice because you could then turn it into almost like a Christmas gift.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems almost like a fun way to celebrate his inadequacy.
I think also he has earned patronising behaviour because he's a serial offender. So if you put a note above the oven saying, have you turned all the burners off? And then put another note on the bedroom door going, seriously, Brian, check that you've turned all the oven burners off. It may be nagging, but I think it's reasonable nagging at this point.
I think you need a carrot and a stick. I think if he stops to behave himself, he should be rewarded.
He'll set fire to the carrot, Martin. I think maybe he needs a stern talking to from a local firefighter. That's the kind of thing you'd do if it was a child, wouldn't you?
You
get firefighters come into their school and tell them not to cross the road without looking first.
Did you used to enjoy that kind of brief contact with the emergency services?
Yes.
Did you?
Yes, and also the drugs talk at school. I loved that. Ex-policeman.
I love the drugs talk because they come in with a briefcase full of drugs.
Yes.
That's great. It's allowed as opposed to every other day where someone turns up with a briefcase full of drugs.
But some people might be sitting in that assembly thinking, how can I steal the drugs from the suitcase? I'd be like, wow, there are actual drugs in this room. Yeah. Oh my God, that's so bad.
I went to the fete in my local village at the weekend, and they had that thing where they have a police car in the middle of the... And it wasn't a vintage one. It was a modern police car.
Yeah, just checking everything staged, ship shape.
No, they weren't. I presume that the officer there could have sprung into action if someone had been cheating at Splat the Rat.
They'd heard that a major drugs operation was using Hertfordshire village fates.
No, but he was there to demonstrate to the kids. You know, they could get in the car and ring the siren and flash the lights at people.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, on the one hand, is that good? Because it shows sort of community cohesion and, you know, the police aren't something to be scared of.
Yeah.
But on the other hand...
If you're not scared of the police, what are they for?
Well, exactly. And I don't know. I don't know if I want that chumminess.
I think it was probably a police officer who was on duty but also wanted to go to the fair. And so pretended they had some official capacity there.
Yeah, even if you hadn't booked the stall space, you would be able to wheel up, wouldn't you, a police car?
Yeah.
And be like, yeah, we paid our 50 quid, yeah.
Yeah.
Here to demonstrate
for
the day.
Well, here's my taser.
Yeah. We love hearing your voice posing questions to us, listeners, and if you want to do that, then the number to call is this.
02081235877.
Or you can Skype answer me this.
You certainly can. Let's see who's done that today.
Hello, Asa from Ashford in Kent here. Helen and Ollie, answer me this. How many calories are in a Viagra tablet? Because I've just taken three, but I have also had a bit of cake, and I'm just wondering how many... of my daily allowance, calorie-wise, I've got left. Thanks.
It's the new diet. Three Viagras before four, then cake.
That sounds like a really brilliant life, to be honest.
Well, actually, a recent study has suggested that Viagra helps people lose weight because it converts white fat, which is just big fat belly fat, into brown fat, which burns calories a lot.
Bullshit.
Tests in mice.
What it does is it makes you have sex, which is then, you know, good physical exercise, isn't it?
Well, I don't know if Asa is having the sex if he's sitting around eating cake. He might have just taken this Viagra by himself.
He's sitting around popping Viagra.
Yeah.
I thought you were only supposed to have one. Can you take three?
Well, he has, unless he's lying.
Yeah.
I think people can take plural, but it might end in unpleasant priapism.
Heart failure.
And faintness.
Yeah.
Because your blood's not distributed around the body as it should be.
Did you see the research that was out a couple of weeks ago that said that men, when they're hungry, prefer fuller-sized women?
And this
was illustrated in all of the newspapers with a photo of Nigella, which I thought was a bit unfair. But it was basically saying if a woman is able to cook well, you're more likely to fancy her if she's larger.
Wow.
Because it triggers the same I don't know, endorphins or dopamine or whatever, that is triggered by being hungry, and a man thinks, at the point that he's hungry, he thinks, I'll be sexually satisfied by someone who knows how to cook.
And maybe she'll feed me afterwards.
And maybe she'll feed me afterwards, yeah. So I just wonder, in the same way, whether it's best to eat the cake if you've just had three Viagra.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you might try and fuck it.
Yeah.
I'm just curious.
How do we know that he hasn't? Maybe he had to destroy the evidence of having fucked the cake by eating the cake afterwards.
So it's like British cake can be the sort of gross comedy equivalent of American pie.
Now that you make a really interesting point there.
Thank you.
American pie was an apple pie, and obviously I know that they chose that because symbolically it represents, you know, American virginity chasteness and small town America and all the goodness of the homely vibes of that, as well as being a pie that you can fuck because it's soft on the inside.
Yeah.
And it's got holes in to let the steam out.
Exactly. If you were doing a British equivalent of that film, and obviously they wouldn't now because it's been done, but if
eel
American pie. Which one?
Eel pie.
Eel.
Eel pie and mash.
Because it's slippery. So if Guy Ritchie had directed it.
That hole in the top of a pork pie.
But those are quite cold, aren't they? I mean, American pie is sort of
warm. You can't fuck a pork pie.
Yeah, but they've got the jelly in.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
so there's lubricant.
The space.
But there's not,
just
not
the
space.
Breaking up all of the pastry.
Well, if you had a needle-like penis, then it'd be fine. In the subsequent American Pie films, does he fuck the same type of pie, or does he fuck different types of pie, like a quiche?
I've seen
quiche, that'd be a mess.
I've actually seen every American Pie film.
Wow, really?
In the official sequence, I've seen one, two, three, and then I think four, and then there was another one that came out last year. Maybe that was four or five.
Is Jason Biggs in all of them?
He's in all of them, exactly. So those are the ones where they've done the spin-offs, where you get Stifler and Eugene Levy. I passed on those, but if Biggs is there, I'm there, I think I'm right in saying that in every single iteration of the film, sequel and otherwise, they either make an ironic knowing reference to him walking past a piece of cake, or like defending his manhood when he's standing naked in the kitchen by holding up a cake,
or brushing some pastry off his penis,
that kind of thing. They make an ironic reference to the first film, or they talk about that event as an event in his character's past.
Wow.
So it's always referenced the whole way through the series.
It's pretty canonical, isn't it? If you'd been caught fucking a pie, I imagine that would stay with you.
It's a motivating thing, yeah. But you see, the thing is, when Helen says, does he fuck a different cake in each film? No, they've done that joke once. He does different things in each film, which are equally embarrassing.
But so it's difficult to find something as emblematic of his outsiderhood, actually fucking the American dream.
Yes,
well,
absolutely.
He could
jizz
all over
right.
the American flag.
Yeah.
So does he do that? Does he spunk on the flag?
He could shove a white picket fence up his ass.
Well, it's not too far off that.
Does he bang the White House?
I think in American Pie 2, he kind of demeans the whole notion of a frat house and its integrity.
Interesting.
By being caught naked on the roof with a VHS porn tape glued to one hand and his penis glued to the other.
Oh dear. It's the indignity.
So it's not as symbolic, you're right, as the pie. But, they've tried there. There may have been an American flag on the roof with him, I can't remember.
But VHS is an interesting choice, isn't it? Because that's a medium that won out by popularity and not by inherent superiority.
Mm. Yeah, well, like the American Pie sequels.
This is very self-referential. So what are the other events for the films?
I'm afraid I don't remember.
Ollie, please reenact every American Pie film in sequence
because
now.
I don't have to watch them then.
Would you like to hear some amazing Viagra facts?
Yes.
Is one of the mountaineers?
No, but Viagra does help treat jet lag in hamsters.
Do you know if a hamster's got jet lag?
I don't know. But apparently only flying east, not west.
But isn't this just because it speeds up your heart? It's not because a hard-on makes you less tired, is it?
It would distract you from the tiredness.
Yeah, well, maybe, yeah.
Apparently, if you dissolve it in a vase full of water, then your flowers will stay straight and stiff for longer.
No,
yeah,
that's made up.
I think it's probably just it alters the structure of the cells a bit so the water stays in them longer or something like that. Mm. And it slows down plant ripening.
Mm. But that's a very expensive way to treat a plant, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, because how much is Viagra? About £8 a pill?
At least.
Got it. You could just buy new flowers.
£8.
During the Afghan War, the CIA rewarded its informants with Viagra. Since the warlords were elderly, they couldn't please their wives. So in exchange for information, the CIA offered them Viagra.
Wow.
That's interesting.
Horny warlords.
It's,
what a picture.
It's all sort of like, it's from the blooper reel of Zero Dark Thirty, that one, isn't it? One of the fun deleted scenes.
Yo, yo, one love. The best thing about tennis is the... A women's tennis. A women's tennis. Hearing those ladies all going... It makes me go in my pants.
I'm Answer Me This Sports Day, out now at answermethispodcast.com/albums.
Here's a question from Hannah in Keswick, who says, I had a feast yesterday.
Ooh, get you!
Rightly considered the king of pre-packaged ice creams for its wonderful chocolatey centre.
And its structural excellence.
Yeah, although I would agree if we were living in a pre-Magnum Infinity era. But I do think nowadays, you know, the baton has been passed.
The stick has been passed.
However, continues Hannah, despite extensive Googling, during which I discovered that Fab ice creams have apparently shrunk in size.
Maybe you've just grown.
Yeah, maybe you didn't zoom in on the image. I can't find out what that heavenly centre in a feast bar actually is. I know it can't be real chocolate, as that would be both too expensive and solid as a rock when frozen. Also, the Wall's website calls it a chocolate-flavoured centre.
Yes.
That's a giveaway, isn't it? Mm-hmm. So, Helen, answer me this. If it's not chocolate, what in the ever-loving heck is at the centre of a feast ice cream?
I think it's delicious chocolate-ish wax.
Are you being serious?
No, but it's a mix of those sinister fats that you know are artificial and sugar and cocoa powder. I think that's why it has to be called chocolate-flavoured, because it doesn't meet the requirements for something to be called chocolate by food standards agency standards.
Do you still buy commercial ice cream bars? Because gelatoria, is that what they're called?
Gelateria.
Gelateria has opened up around the corner from you.
Yeah, a couple of years ago, the greatest time of our lives.
Who'd have thought that would still be running now? Seriously.
I know. I did not think it would make through that first winter.
No.
But it has. Crystal Creams. If you're in the Crystal Palace area, do make a beeline for it.
I can actually verify that. Mm. I can add my support to that, because it's not just... I mean, obviously, that is a local recommendation. It's not quite worth making the trip here. But no, it's certainly worth making a trip to Crystal Creams if you're anywhere near Crystal Palace.
Yeah, this is Martin's and my restaurant rating system. Mm-hmm. So would you make a trip specifically for that restaurant?
Yeah.
Would you make a substantial...
So Wing Yip, yes.
Yeah. Would you make a substantial detour for that restaurant?
Yeah.
Yeah. Would you make a small detour for that restaurant, Crystal Creams in Crystal Palace?
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
What's the next stage down, Martin?
Well, it's like a Michelin guide. Would you cross a country? Would you cross a city? Or would you cross the street, basically?
And then I suppose right down the bottom is, you're in a service station. Yeah. It's there. Do you still choose to avoid it?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Crystal Creams, I'd say small detour of up to 10 minutes each way. Yes. But the ice cream will melt if it's a much longer detour.
Well, see, this is the thing. So, in that world, does commercial ice cream still have a role? Is there a place for the feast ice cream?
Well, they've got Ferrero Rocher flavour there, which is a bit like a mashed up feast with extra wafer.
So I think we're saying no, aren't we?
No, but sometimes I want a feast. I want that waxy centre.
Yes.
I want that structural fun.
Hi, this is Chris from Hook. Helen, Ollie, answer me this. Where does the trope of the neighbour in a sitcom always wanting to come around and borrowing a cup of sugar or getting into scrapes come from? We've been watching it in Bewitched and in lots of other things, Fresh Fields. I'm just trying to remember where it first came from, and I can't quite put my finger on it. Any thoughts?
Well, it's probably in the Bible, isn't it?
I'm not sure that's widely seen as a sitcom.
It's not one of those funny ones. Like Gavin and Stacey, it wasn't full of lols, but it was counted as a sitcom.
I mean, Adam and Eve were neighbours technically, I suppose. So is The Serpent.
I think it's in Leviticus, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then someone ends up having sex with a relative.
Anyway, I think Chris means more Ned Flanders than any of the giants from the Abrahamic faiths.
Right.
And I think the origins of that trope probably come from I Love Lucy. Because
really?
If you're talking... Well, the thing is, look, there may have been an earlier sitcom where there was a funny neighbour, but
like
I Love
Skepto
Lucy...
or something.
Well, no, that was later than I Love Lucy. I Love Lucy was in the early 50s.
There was nothing earlier than I Love Lucy, really, except for war news.
There were American comedy shows, but I think I Love Lucy set the template for studio-based sitcoms in so many ways that even if someone else had done it first, it was because Lucy did it that it became a trope, I think. The thing about the neighbours in I Love Lucy is that they're there to provide a counterpoint towards their zany neighbours. So Lucy and Ricardo had a crazy marriage where they'd, you know, have actually quite passive-aggressive and slightly demeaning fights.
Yeah, they did not get on.
They didn't, in real life or in the show.
Nah.
But, you know, they'd get up to mad stuff, whereas...
Would they ever?
You sort of, in a way, because they're in their own little world, you can almost lose track of how weird they're being unless you have the straight conservative neighbour turn up halfway through the episode.
Yes.
And you realise how unlike other conservative middle American couples they are.
The straight man.
The straight man, exactly. So, and you see that right the way through to like Angus Deaton in One Foot in the Grave, I was thinking, for example, the classic example of that, isn't it? That is basically just Fred and Ethel from I Love Lucy again.
But it is always sugar. It's very rarely, say, flour, is it? Gravy browning. And I suppose sugar is a vital ingredient, but it's not the only vital ingredient.
Well, it would give a reason why you're at home if you're baking, wouldn't it? Whereas if you came round to ask for a Wi-Fi password, you'd be in and out very quickly. Mm. Whereas sugar, you're spending a day essentially pissing around in the kitchen. I mean, I know we all need nutrition to live.
Women couldn't get jobs then.
Sure. But the point is, you've got time to stop and chat, and that, again, is useful for the sitcom writer, isn't it? Mm.
And then shops weren't open all the time like they are now.
But really, the reason why you have neighbours as characters within sitcoms is because studio sitcoms have one or two or three sets that are there permanently, week in, week out. Mm. So think of Friends. You know, you've got Central Perk. It was already stretching credibility that they'd constantly be in the coffee shop all the time because they'd be caffeinated to fuck and they didn't have any money anyway in the story. But it made sense to give them somewhere else to be other than the coffee shop, and then they cleverly made that their apartment by having the two sets of friends living opposite each other, even though that would be quite unlikely.
But why didn't they learn to make coffee in the apartment? Making coffee is so easy, and they would have saved a lot of money.
So much money. And they would have spent a lot of money on those apartments in Manhattan.
Yeah, and then they wouldn't have got into the fights with people sitting on what they perceived to be their sofa. Mm. They wouldn't have had to deal with Gunther and his romantic disappointment in Rachel.
But it makes it so much easier to reset scenes, doesn't it? If you've got one scene set in Joey and Chandler's apartment and then another scene set in Monica and the other one's apartment, then you can almost film them in sequence. And I imagine they probably did so that the audience could follow the narrative usually, unless there was a big prop or something. You could film them in sequence just by rolling the cameras from one set to the other. You'd have to change the lights, you have to change the conditions. Whereas if you've got a different look like Ross's apartment, that is a different set. That's a bit of a pain in the ass to go and film in, isn't it?
They probably have to plonk that in the middle of Monica's apartment.
Exactly. You have to reset, and then the audience have to wait and they have to understand what's going on. Whereas it's very easy to keep the fluidity of that permanent set of having a neighbour's set there all the time. And even in animation, even with Ned Flanders, you know, you've got the exterior of the Simpsons house very well detailed. Makes sense to have a neighbour living in the house next door because you've got the fence, you've got the house, you've got the side view, you've got everything right there.
And it's a relationship that most members of the audience would be able to comprehend.
Yes, exactly. And of course,
Probation officer, maybe not.
I mean, you mentioned Steptoe. I mean, Rising Damp, you know, all the way through that, keeping up appearances, class comedy. It's a classic British thing, isn't it?
Birds of a feather.
You have someone living next to you who is either upper or lower class compared to you. And then you have class tension built into the sitcom, even if within your family you're all of the same class.
And if they're an antagonist, they're right there all the time.
Exactly, yeah. You can't get rid of them. You've got the embarrassment of being seen literally with your pants down in the yard.
Yeah. That's sort of the collision of the private and the public.
Exactly.
Yeah. Here's a question from Tom from Oxfordshire, who says, I recently heard that rock drummer Jeff Porcaro died of a heart attack brought on by an allergy to weed killer he was using while maintaining his garden.
Oh, how horrible.
It is horrible. As I'm leaving school this year to study at Manchester's RNCM, and I'm very scared about the big move, maybe a good way to break the ice with other musicians would be to open with some interesting trivia.
Oh yeah, that's great, isn't it, with freshers? So how do you reckon you're going to die then? That's going to go down really well.
Here's a hilarious fact about someone dying tragically. Yeah. So, Ollie, answer me this. What is the most unusual and interesting way a rock star has kicked the bucket?
Well, in fairness, but it's not funny, I think the answer to this probably is Michael Hutchins, isn't it?
Ooh.
I mean, you know, I'm not saying it's funny. I'm aware we're a comedy show, but he asked the question. I think that's the answer. However, if there is such a thing as a funny death, I think it probably is more when people are asking for it. When they're playing fast and loose with Darwinism, basically.
Or when they're doing Russian roulette or something.
Yeah, so Russian roulette is the one that people always say Johnny Ace died of.
Right.
Who's Johnny Ace?
He was an American R&B singer from Memphis. Oh. His popularity peaked in the 1950s when you were about 10, so I'm surprised you don't know him.
I remember dancing to those Johnny Ace songs.
He accidentally shot himself in the head with a .22 caliber pistol. Jesus.
Guns are not toys.
And the people always misreported this. People often say that Johnny Ace was playing Russian roulette. And actually, what he was doing, apparently, he used to kind of Spectre-style pull out the pistol and just shoot things, like shoot cans off the wall, and like he was a bit pistol-happy. And he'd been drinking this particular evening. Someone said, be careful. And he allegedly said, look, it's okay, the gun's not loaded. So he pointed at his head and killed himself.
Hilarious.
Well, I didn't say it was funny.
What a great opening gambit for Tom.
But that is a really good prank, actually.
It probably is the most unusual and interesting way a rock star has died.
Well, I don't know, because Steve Peregrine Took, co-founder of T-Rex, choked on a cocktail cherry.
Oh.
You wouldn't be expecting that. None of the unusual rock star deaths I found are funny, because they are still someone dying and that's tragic.
Yes, and actually,
but some of them are weird.
Sometimes when people die in a very outlandish way, it's... in a way it's underwhelming because you expect rock stars to do that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So there's one guy called Randy Rhodes who is a guitarist for Ozzy Osbourne. Yeah. And he died by basically dicking around in a plane and doing loop-the-loops and crashing into the tour bus. Which is horrible, but it's also unusual But yeah. It's the kind of thing you'd expect of a pissed up rock star, isn't it?
Yeah.
Whereas choking on a cocktail cherry, not so much.
Yeah, Tommy Tucker, the blues singer and songwriter, died after being poisoned from the stuff he was using to refinish his hardwood floors.
Oh, jeez.
Wow. So who'd have thought housekeeping would play such a role in so many of these stories? Weed killer, hardwood floors.
Never housekeep.
It's better to be dirty.
Yeah. Well,
would you advocate as much as you can?
Here's another housekeeping death. French pop star Claude François, known as Clo-Clo in France, in 1978, in his Paris apartment, he was standing in a filled bath and tried to straighten a lightning fixture and was electrocuted because his hands were wet.
Oh.
Don't fix things when your bath is full and your hands are wet.
Why was he standing in a bath?
Presumably it was easier to access the fixture from in the bath than outside of the bath. I don't know. He wasn't able to explain it after his death.
No, that's always the problem, isn't it?
But I would advise Tom to consider some other ways of making friends. Maybe talk about what you did on your gap year and other small talk.
I think that would be better.
Rather than going, do you want to hear how Jerry Fuchs, drummer from Chick Chick Chick, died? He fell down an elevator shaft.
Oh.
Ha ha ha.
Bum 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 bum. 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 Helen Ollie, answer me this. Don't ridicule me and don't take the piss. Give me a clue to what I'm asking. Then in your awesome knowledge I'll be basking. What's in sound bad? I'm so alone.
No one to email.
No one to email and no one to phone. Where can I get new friends from? Answer me this, podcast.com.
Time for a question from Tom, who says, I have recently been asked to write a reference for someone. The only thing... That was the sound of complete disinterested intrigue.
What am I supposed to feel about that? Impressed?
It's a thing.
Weld?
I've written a reference, mate.
The only thing, continues Tom, is that the person who is asking me for a reference is a person I fired for being shit at their job. I ignored their first two emails asking me for the letter of reference, but she's continued to email and text, so I feel I should provide her with something.
She's not really good at hint-taking, is she?
No, obviously not. This is probably one of the reasons that you fired her. I don't want to lie and say she was good, because I would hate for someone else to end up working with her because of what I wrote. But at the same time, I don't want to be too offensive in the letter. So, Helen, answer me this. Can you turn the following bullet points into suitably bullshitty euphemisms? Or indeed, find positives in this list of negatives that I can use in my letter of reference.
Okay.
She was a cook / stewardess on a sailing yacht.
Okay.
Okay. Bullet point number one. She was a terrible cook.
Applies herself to new situations and tries to learn new skills.
We all were very slim and healthy on her cooking.
Bullet point number two. She was asked to cook light Mediterranean cuisine, but mostly made Polish food.
Wide range of international cuisines covered.
A very interpretive cooking style.
Yes. Full of surprises.
She spent all day using her phone with her headphones constantly in.
Not one to waste time with chatter.
Independent.
She slowly got the rest of the crew to do more and more of her work.
Good manager, delegator.
But never offered help to the others. Mm. Didn't try and step above her pay grade.
Fostered independence in other staff.
The kitchen became so disgusting and unsafe that it stank out the rest of the boat.
Left her mark.
Yeah. She would not take criticism or instructions without getting defensive, and regular full-blown arguments erupted.
What a personality.
Headstrong and confident.
Yeah.
Born leader.
Stood up for her beliefs.
Yes. Final bullet point. I am 100% sure she lied on her CV.
Creative.
Yes. I think we've done that before. I think that's pretty good. I think that's a range of talents that anyone reading between the lines would know what you meant.
I've always heard that you can get sued for giving a bad reference.
Yeah, that's right. If you can't substantiate the accusations that you're levelling at the employee in your reference, like if you never pursued a complaint at the time, then you do run the risk of them suing you for damages if they don't get the job or for financial loss. But a new employer could also claim damages against you if you give a glowing reference on an employee who then turns out to be bad.
Oh.
So you can't win, Tom. So I think you just have to say, I'm not giving you a reference. Or apparently you can just give the bare minimum point saying...
I employed her.
Yeah, she worked here.
Then I fired her.
These were the dates.
Yeah.
But yeah, you could say she was fired. Well, listeners, this brings us to the end of Answer Me This, episode 293.
But if we have left you wanting more, remember that if you download the Answer Me This app... you get a free few minutes of content every single time we deliver an episode.
The stuff that was too good to put in the episode.
That's right.
Or the other thing.
And we've been doing this for a few years now, so if you've not got the Answer Me This app yet, if you get it now, there are hours worth of extra content for you to discover on there, albeit they're only a few minutes long each.
And all of the previous year's best ofs are on there as well. They're not available on our free feed.
That's right.
App bonus, but they are available for sale at answermethisstore.com.
Yes, and it's answermethisstore.com/apps that you go to get the app for iPhone, iPad, Android or Windows Phone, and guess what? We earn a little bit of money when you buy them as well. So thank
Yay.
You for doing that and supporting the show.
And if you want to give us something other than money, then questions would be nice for following episodes, and all of our contact details are on our website.
AnswerMeThisPodcast.com.
Wow, I got our web address
you
wrong.
You did? What
that
were you going to say?
293rd time.
Answer me this, and then you stopped talking like you've forgotten.
I just blanked. It's just like when you're writing your name, you get halfway through and think, what's next?
Why am I here? Why are we doing a podcast? What's the point? This could be the beginning of the end.
I've just been on automatic all this time. How does my name end? Shit, shit, shit. That's what happened now.
Okay, well, Helen's going to go off into therapy and we'll see you in a fortnight's time.
Or will we? Will I remember to turn off in a fortnight?
Bye!